You're listening to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast with Karen McMahon. We invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and enable you to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce.
Divorce is like a foreign land filled with unfamiliar rules and jargon and pressure to make complex decisions that will impact the rest of your life. Don't go it alone. Go to rapidreliefcall.com and get the support and guidance you need.
Said to me, so I'm just curious, what's different about the way that he showed up today? And it jolted me right back to reality of that he was still the same person. And I had this expectation that he was going to be different. And it was me sitting back and saying, why am I still letting him get to me? He's not changing and I'm supposed to be working on me. From that point on, whenever I would speak to him, your voice would echo in my head of he's showing up the way he is and he's not doing the work on himself.
Welcome to Voices of Celebration. This series is designed to inspire and encourage you as we share real life experiences of former Journey Beyond Divorce clients who invested in their personal growth through divorce and emerged a better version of themselves with a more rewarding post-divorce life. I'm very excited to have Stephanie with me today. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for having me here today. Such a pleasure, my honor.
I recall so much about our conversations, and it's been quite a number of years now. So I think you reached out sometime around 2014, 15, if that sounds right. Can you share with our audience what was going on that you reached out for support?
Oh, I was a mess. I was in the throes of a separation. I was standing, if you recall, I was standing for my marriage because I didn't want the divorce. I was in a pretty bad place. I was crying all the time. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was very lost, very afraid. It was a really difficult time. And the way that we met was, and everything about our relationship has just been so, God's hand was in this whole thing of us connecting and altering my life for the better.
Right. And, you know, the people who are listening in tonight, Stephanie, so many of them are in those early stages where we're so scared, often paralyzed. Mm-hmm. There are fear stories that are causing us even more angst than the divorce process itself. When you think back, what were some of the biggest struggles that you were facing or fears that you felt were paralyzing you?
There were so many. I was with my husband at the time. We were together dating and married. We were going on 24 years. So it was literally like taking one body and, as I always think of it, like this and ripping it apart, and the financial worries, what was going to happen to my home, what was going to happen in my future, how was everything going to work out? Was I being foolish for standing for my marriage? I wore my wedding band for a couple of years after he asked for the divorce, the separation. Actually, I ended up filing for the divorce, if you remember. There was a lot of fear of what people would think. I didn't tell a lot of people for about a year that really, really deep what was going on, even family.
Yeah. Yeah. And your child was very young too.
Jeffrey was 8.
Yeah.
And he was the same age as when my parents separated. And so I also dealt with that, right, remembering that what it felt like for me. And I was afraid of how it would affect him. Just recalling everything I went through, and I didn't want him to go through what I went through. So it was also protecting him. You know, and I'd walk out of my house and I'd smile and everything was fine. But in my house, I cried all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people talk about that too, just that kind of schizophrenic feeling that you're putting on, your game face for your child or at work really just melting down inside. Oh, yeah.
I was in sales. I remember I would go to work and I would walk into my office. I would walk into my boss's office. I would shut the door. I would cry hysterically for like 20 minutes, pull myself together, put in eye drops, fix my makeup and walk out the door. And I had to go sell and I smiled the whole time. Mm-hmm. Don't even know how I did it.
And I think so many people expect to be on their A game when dealing with such traumatic emotions mm-hmm. and transitions. And the truth of the matter is what you just described is probably what we've all gone through in those earlier stages of divorce, where you're just trying to hold it all together.
Yeah.
So one of the things we always talk to clients about is the focus when we meet is often on what's wrong with my spouse and what my spouse did wrong and what my spouse caused. And our goal is to shift that reflection back to you mm-hmm. since you're going to be with you long term. And sure. What can you do? And so what do you remember about some of the key things where you had ahas, where you started stretching and growing?
Funny, I recall you and I had a conversation, and I think right before we got on a call, I had just hung up the phone with my ex-husband, and when you called, I was mad and sad and frustrated, and I remember, like, I don't even know if you said hello, and I was firing off where I was at, and then after you let me have my little tangent, you said to me, so I'm just curious, what's different about the way that he showed up today? And it jolted me right back to like reality of that he was still the same person. And I had this expectation that he was going to be different. And it was me sitting back and saying, why am I still letting him get to me? He's not changing and I'm supposed to be working on me. From that point on, whenever I would speak to him, your voice would echo in my head of, he's showing up the way he is and he's not doing the work on himself, but you are. Right. And so remember that. And eventually I was able to have conversations and not have him get to me. I was able to be okay, calm, which is crazy.
Well, and what you're talking about, which is so brilliant, is the practice of acceptance. Mm-hmm. Which we speak so often to clients mm-hmm. about, because when you started accepting that your husband shows up a certain way, behaves a certain way, we don't have to put any judgment of good, bad, mm-hmm. right, or wrong. It's yep. how he shows up
right.
and realize that you are the one who kept wanting it to be different. It's like born a zebra, show up a zebra, not a giraffe, right? And so when you stepped into the acceptance of, okay, this is how this individual behaves and shows up, I'm hearing that a lot of the stress and tension was released.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was like I was a different person. And I still use that to this day, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've recently received a saying that just so resonated with me. I've been sharing it with all my clients, and so it's appropriate right now to share it, which is when we're expecting and accepting of someone the way they show up, it takes the resentment, the surprise, the disappointment away. And so both expecting and accepting, and if they show up more pleasing than usual, we're pleased, but we're not reactive and disappointed and frustrated or surprised.
Right. And that's spot on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's such a different world to live in, to be expecting and accepting for who they are.
Right.
And then you can be calm and you can learn so much about yourself, which really is what it's about.
And in many cases, you might have a plan. So if it was a spouse who showed up late to pick up the kid, then mm-hmm. you have a plan B for how to handle that instead of being surprised every time that they show up late.
Right.
So one of the things that you took away was this level of acceptance around how your ex behaved. One of the things I recall you sharing with me was because of your childhood, how you were designed to be very kind of caretaking and type A. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how that impacted this transition period of yours?
You know, I'm going to probably cry, right? Oh, man. I had to do a work on myself. I had to really look deep at my part of the failure of the marriage, because I thought, but I'm doing everything and I'm helping and I'm giving and I'm loving and I'm providing and that should be enough. And in reality, it wasn't what he was looking for. I thought that's what he was looking for. That was number one. And then number two, as you recall, I have a lot of responsibilities and allowed other people, not just him, to cross boundaries. I didn't have boundaries, to be honest with you. I didn't have any. And so that was something you and I worked on a lot.
You said yes a lot, didn't you?
I said yes to
when
everything.
When you didn't really want to, and you couldn't.
I will never, you changed my life. So my mom lives with me. And you were talking earlier about investing in yourself. I have no idea how much money I invested in my relationship with my mother and you, right? Because it really was not just about my going through the divorce. It was really about myself growing in relationships. And my mother and I have a thriving relationship because of, because of my divorce. Who knew? But really, I mean, because you taught me how to set boundaries and how to say no. And I remember when I went down to talk to her one day and I walked out of the room and she had thrown herself on the bed because she was upset with me because I was putting a boundary up. And I shut the door and I started crying because it was so hard for me to say no. It was so hard for me to ask for help. I would cry and cry and cry and cry because I didn't want to do it. But you had told me you need to exercise that muscle of receiving and of saying no. And, you know, much like exercise, you don't want to do it. And it's really hard to do because your muscles don't want to work. But let me tell you, once you start doing it and you get strong, it is liberating.
Yes. That's a perfect word for it.
Yeah.
And I think that so often people, you said something earlier, I just want to come back to, is like, I was doing everything, and I'll have people call me and say like, but I did everything. And so if there's 200%, what did you do? I did 199%. Well, if you did 199%, what did you get? Oh, mm-hmm. You know, cause you're not supposed to do 200%. You're only supposed to do your 100% and they're supposed to do their 100%. And so that whole giving, right? Really strong giving muscle,
yeah.
Not so strong receiving muscle.
Sure.
And that fear of saying, no, I'm going to hurt someone. Someone's not going to like me. Someone's going to be upset by my no.
Right.
And what's interesting is in the center of that, we feel like we have so much power, right? What makes me that powerful, that my no is going to destroy somebody.
Right.
But that's not the way you're looking at it, which is why when we worked and you were able to shift perspectives, and it is hard. I mean, any new practice is hard.
Absolutely.
Right. The practice of acceptance is hard. The practice of boundaries is hard.
Right. And by the way, me thinking that I was doing everything, I was doing everything, right? Didn't allow him to do what he was supposed to do as my husband, as the man. And it was actually not good. And that was my fault. You know,
what you were doing.
Yeah. When people ask me about my marriage or something, I will say, like, it takes two to be married. It takes two to be divorced too. And you've got to figure out your piece and own it. And it's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's actually really good to own it and know that you were part of the reason also.
Exactly. And that whole doing so much and then actually inviting the other adult under the roof to do things, one of the other dangers that that person is often exposed to is that they're not doing it right because they're not doing it our way. Mm-hmm. And so they finally step in and do something. Right. And what are they faced with?
Yep.
A ton of criticism.
Absolutely.
And so this is all about understanding our part. Like, how did that serve me? And why did mm-hmm. I do that? And,
right.
and how could it be different?
Right. And it's control. It's a control issue.
It's a very
big... I wanted to be in control of things, and I really wasn't in control of anything. In my head, I thought I was, but I wasn't. And it's not really fun to be in control.
It doesn't invite an equal collaborative relationship.
No, not at all.
Right. And so I'm just hearing so many different things in terms of boundaries and owning your part. Well, before I move on, was there anything else that just stands out?
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
Yeah, he had an affair. And so that was broken trust. And even though we tried to repair, he said that he was trying, but he wasn't. And I believed him because, you know, I remember, I think it's called Rejoice Marriage Ministries, something like that. And it's all about standing for your marriage. And I would read every day and I would pray every day and ask God to restore the marriage. And because I never wanted to be divorced. And who goes into a marriage thinking they're going to get divorced, right?
I don't know anyone.
But I started to not trust me because I was allowing that to happen. And I didn't trust the decisions that I was making. Yeah. And that was tough.
And the interesting thing there is part of, like, on the foundation of trusting other people is trusting ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Trusting our intuitive hits when we think something might be wrong, trusting our decisions. And so I remember when we were talking, there was the betrayal in the marriage, but then the issues of trust went much deeper. And I remember that you did a lot of work on understanding the foundation of that and working on developing your own trust in your intuition and your judgments. And there's so many decisions to be made during divorce. What is your recollection of your maybe journey to being able to make decisions?
You know, the one thing that stands out in my head the most is that I had a lot of people that were concerned for me, friends and some family, the ones who knew. And everybody had an opinion and everybody wanted to protect me and tell me what to do. And I'm the baby of the family and it doesn't matter how old I am, I'm still going to be the baby. And I remember even my attorney was asking me, why are you not filing for a divorce? And I said, because I don't feel it yet. I'm not ready. And every once in a while he'd call me every few weeks. Are you ready to file yet? No. What are you waiting for? I don't know. And I would listen to people, but I remember I would tell myself, don't do anything unless it feels right. And I kept pressing into God every day. I was blessed that I had a friend who actually, after he had moved out, which was a couple of years after the separation, if you recall, he lived here.
Right.
And I had a friend who moved in to help me to be able to keep the house. And she would pray with me every day, multiple times a day. And I pressed into God and I just said, help me, you know, lead me. And I did start to trust myself going through that part where I finally did file for divorce because he wasn't going to. Of all the decisions that I made, they were decisions that I made. Nobody helped me. And there were two instances that I listened to somebody else, and both of them were things that I shouldn't have done. And so in hindsight, I realized that I do have to trust myself, because every decision that I made, I was happy with.
Right.
And the process was okay, even though I was scared, because I didn't really trust myself, right? It was such a like, what do? You know, you want to trust yourself, but you don't. But in the long run, I can't have everybody make the decision. It's my life. And if I allow them to tell me what to do, then in the end, I'm going to resent other people. I had to trust myself. I had to take some authoritative control, which for myself was hard, right? I wanted to control everything else, but to control myself, I didn't want to. It was very strange.
And it's another muscle that until you start assessing, you know, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What's my intuition telling me? And then how do I take those three and figure out, I believe we call it holographic thinking, where you take your logic, your feelings, and your intuition and kind of balance them all out. And when you're coming from, wow, I married this person, they cheated on me, so was that a bad decision? Did they ever love me? Like all of the stories we begin to tell ourselves. And then how can I make decisions? And so you're starting there. And you know, one of the big things about coaching is interesting, because I'll have people call where they're like, so tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. But I believe I was one of those few people who didn't tell you what to do.
Yes, I did ask you, what do I do? Yeah. Right.
And can you just share with our audience the difference when you're being coached without agenda or judgment or a position coming from your coach? How did that impact your process?
The first thing that stands out, which is just so funny, I remember being mad at you. I remember I would get mad at you. And in my head, I would be like, oh, here she goes again. She's not going to tell me what to do. She wants me to make a decision. I remember like my body literally being upset with you, because I just wanted you to
give you the answer.
Give me that direction. Give me advice of some sort. And even though I wanted to make the decision myself, I really wanted somebody else to who I confided in, obviously. Outsiders didn't know my heart. You did, and you wouldn't help me. I was angry. But it felt good, ultimately, like I said, because when I looked back on everything, I was having a lot of aha moments of how, going deep into even my childhood, like how it affected what I was doing and decisions that I made and how I was going to move forward. So coaching with you really provided me with a peace through the anger, through the struggles, through the crying, through the tough times and the decisions and all that. But when I always hung up the phone feeling better and being able to get through the next week or two before I would talk to you again, like, okay, because you always gave me a tool for my toolbox. I love my toolbox. I still use it.
Excellent. Well, that's the idea. Use it for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
You're saying so many really valuable things for our listeners to hear. One of the things that I can't emphasize enough is that when we support someone going through divorce, number one, if I'm fishing for you and just giving you fish as opposed to teaching you how to fish, really, I'm stealing from you.
Yes.
And so the idea in coaching is that you do have all the answers, mm-hmm. and that when we work together, it's a matter of peeling back the onion and digging deep and getting clear so that you then emerge so confident in making your own decisions, which was something that was very important to you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that, honestly, our desire is not just to help someone get through their divorce. Our desire is to help someone transform through their divorce. So whether you're dealing with an adult child with addiction or the death of a loved one or a career that falls apart or a pandemic or 100 other things, that you have this robust toolbox.
Yep.
That you've built up, that no matter what happens, yeah, you'll get thrown off your game for a short period of time, but that you can always come back and re-engage with all that you've learned and grown with. And that's what I'm hearing you say, which is really just beautiful.
Absolutely. Coaching with you was an investment in myself, and I am worth it. I can confidently say that now, which back then I didn't think really that I was, but I'm worth it. Now I know that. And you changed my life. If I didn't coach with you, I really don't know where I would be right now. Every day I use something of what I learned through you in my life. It's just amazing. I don't know if you recall, but I had a few counselors before I started coaching with you. And one of my counselors was very good. She was through my church, but very different. Counseling isn't coaching, as you know. Coaching is like, I'm going to be your side partner and we're going to do this together and I'm here for you. You
know, and I think that piece that you just shared, where you emerge from the session and you not only have new perspectives, but you've created that action plan to bridge you from one session to the next and move the ball forward. And that's just, I remember just watching you move and just feeling like you were having these growth spurts. You were like growing in leaps and bounds.
I remember.
And your confidence was growing and your self-esteem was growing along with that.
Yeah.
Do you recall, I mean, I do, and my divorce is pretty far behind me. Do you recall some of the fear stories you had about what it was going to be like to be divorced, a post-divorce? Do you remember anything?
Oh, yeah.
Can you share with the audience? Because I want you to know that the people listening, they have that fear story. And they're early on in the tunnel, and the tunnel looks bloody dark and bloody long. And if you could share some of that, I think that would be really helpful.
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today.
That tunnel. Yeah. I listened to Clint last week, who you had did a live with, and he said, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And initially when somebody had said that to me, I wanted to smack them because I was like, please don't tell me about the light at the end of the tunnel. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It doesn't matter how far off it is, it's there. And I think you just keep reaching for it. Just keep striving for the light at the end of the tunnel. Oh my gosh, there was fears of, you know, I'm pretty independent, as you know. And there was fears of, I always saw him as my support or crutch. And it was like, oh my gosh, he's not going to be there. How am I going to continue to have a successful career? And when in reality, it was me who was causing the success of my career. It wasn't him at all, which you helped me to uncover. Thank you. One of the big fears was being alone, not having companionship. I think for me, that was very, very difficult. Yeah. What was I going to do? I didn't want to put everything into my children and not have my own self-care and just push myself to the side and be one of those people that when the children leave, I have nothing,
right?
You know, and it was like, what do I do? How do I not be alone? And even in the acquaintances and the friends and the family and everybody else. And I remember like at one point I was in a room with so many people and I felt so alone. And you can't explain that to people. I love my brother to pieces and he's got a wonderful marriage. And sometimes when I speak to him, I'm like, he doesn't understand because he's never experienced it. And he means well, but people don't understand the heart of like being alone. I mean, it still chokes me up because it's a scary thought, you know?
And have you experienced any, without going into detail, have you experienced new relationships since your divorce?
Just a couple. one that was just a friend, and it was like, I knew that it wasn't going to go anywhere. I say the rebound, I hate to say that, but usually the first person that you meet is not going to be the one, because really I hadn't done all the work I needed to do on myself. And I think that was really the point. So it was kind of learning, what do I really want? What am I really looking for? Where is the one? Is the one there? I would joke with my friends all the time and say, I think God's sending him on a turtle and not on a horse, because he's not here yet. And I dated another guy who I cared about very deeply, but it wasn't a healthy relationship. And he cared about me too, but it wasn't I wasn't able to be myself. Percent. I came to learn like what I truly wanted. And I actually wrote a letter to God. This is what I want. But I forgot to tell God what I didn't want.
Yeah.
Jealousy, things like that. And so.
Let me ask you something about your relationship. When you look back on that relationship that didn't end up working out, what do you see in terms of the personal growth through the divorce that you showed up different, or you had different eyes or different perspective on your value, anything like that going through that relationship?
Well, it was interesting. I actually showed up as myself again, and I couldn't believe it. I was doing the same thing all over, but I was realizing it. So I was seeing, and I was saying, this isn't good. This isn't right. Don't accept this. No, you're worth it. You don't have to settle. And just real, like, so showing up the same, but then when I would start to realize, I would say, okay, pull back a little bit. What are you looking for? What are you doing? And it was really my own internal fight, right? Because I didn't want to be lonely. I wanted to have companionship, but I didn't want to settle. And it was back and forth and back and forth. And we ended up becoming really good friends, which I thought was great. But in the long run, in the back of my head, I thought, well, maybe one day. It was like, what are you doing, really?
And it's a fear thought. I mean, you talked a lot about fear of being alone, which is certainly something that a lot of people going through divorce feel. And I love what you just said, because the truth is our habits are, you know, we create deep ruts in the road when we've had habits that last years or decades. And so you got out of a relationship, and the fact that you kind of slipped back into old ways of being, at least at first, makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But then the toolbox doesn't go away, right? So it's like, so that starts poking around, and it's like, wait a second, I did a lot of work here. You know, what am I for? And does it serve me?
And this still working on yourself, you know, and I still knew that I still had a work to do on me, right? So like, don't just, because somebody's there, that's the person that you're supposed to be with, still work on yourself. And then that's what I continued to do, was work and work and work. And I can tell you that I met a man, and I realized that it's okay for me to be who I am. And so it's very interesting, because right from the get-go, I started talking about who I was. This is who I am. You can like me or not, and that's okay. If you don't, we'll have a nice lunch and we'll move on. I mean, first date, I was asking questions that some people would never, but I'm like, at my age, I want to know. I'm not going to go into this with eyes closed and be a little resistant. Let him chase me. I hate to say that. Guys are probably watching this right now like, really? But the reality is, don't throw yourself out there and be that trying to take care of or maternal. It was like, whoa. And I would feel it start to come out and go back up. It's actually wonderful. The feeling is very mutual. And I think he may be the one that came in on the turtle, to be honest with you.
So, and there's something so powerful about showing up authentic.
And it is, because when you're really yourself,
then the person actually gets to fall in love with you instead of your masks.
Right? It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And now I don't have to, I don't want to say hide or compensate or anything, because now I'm just me. And you know what? Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. What's John Candy? I like me. I love me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a good person, and he sees that I'm a good person. And that even makes me feel even better about the person that I am. And it's just so beautiful. It really is. And so when I think back, it's that light at the end of the tunnel, and it took a long time to get there. But along the way, the light kept getting brighter and brighter and brighter. Now, I don't know. I really do truly feel he's my soulmate, which is because I've never, ever felt this way before about anything. It's just very bizarre. And we could talk about that another time. But, you know, it's still growth. You know what I mean?
And that's what I was going to say. All things in due time. And right. The fact that you're describing yourself as showing up more authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, the sad thing is we'll show up with a mask and then we get comfortable and we take the mask off and it's like, what's your problem with me? Well, you're not the one I fell in love with. I fell in love with your mask, right?
So absolutely, right?
So I want to wrap this up. What words of encouragement would you like to leave our audience with, given the journey that you've been through?
Words of encouragement. I would say, trust your intuition, trust your gut. You're worth it. And just believe that the decisions that you're making are right. If it doesn't feel right, don't do it. No matter what somebody tells you to do, if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. Follow your lead, as I call, because I'm very strong faith in God. Christ in me, I follow that. If it feels yucky and it doesn't feel peaceful, don't do it. Whatever that could be, whether it's a decision in regards to the divorce or filing or anything, or meeting other people and your future. And I would say, and work on yourself. One of my friends, one of the best pieces of advice he could have given to me, he said to me, Stephanie, go work out. He said, get up and go do something. Don't sit. Don't be by yourself. Don't be still. Go take care of you. And I started to take care of myself. And it's wonderful. It just changed my life to invest in me in all levels, coaching and working out and wellness and meditation and everything. And so my, I would say, take care of you. You're worth it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me and sharing your story. I think that there are many who are going to be inspired and encouraged by it. And I am honored to have gotten to work with you. And
thank you.
You're amazing and you're doing great things with your life. And
thank you so much. I owe you. I'm forever indebted because you'll always be with me. I mean, imagine like when I'm older and I'm still using my toolbox.
That's it.
Thank you so much, Karen, for having me on. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me.
You're very welcome. And we will be back with some more Voices of Celebration. So we'll see you then. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.